We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
What about this thing they found up in the North Sea, under the North Sea, that looks like the spaceship out of Star Wars, the Millennium Falcon? It's kind of an odd-shaped, disc-shaped thing.
Oh, weird. I didn't hear about that.
You hear about that, and then it goes away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's again, one of the failings of the corporate media is that sometimes they'll actually tell you a little bit of something as a breaking news story, and you go, wow, and you keep trying to follow it, and it never follows. They never say anything more about it.
Well, that's the weird part, too. I don't know what, it says a lot of things, I guess you could say, about the media, but it's like you would think, given how fantastic the UFO issue is, that they would want to milk this thing for as much as possible, because if it's genuinely legitimate, as you and I seem to think it is, you'd think that they would want to get into it and get behind it, because there's so much meat to that, you know, but they don't, and that should tell you everything you need to know about it, really.
Well, that's another example of where they can't just keep it totally hidden, and some of the brass of some of the networks and publishers and everybody else, they see the interest in the public and they can't help themselves but try to profit from putting on TV shows and movies and books about UFOs. But at the same time, the people who are actually in control at the very top, they don't want people knowing what's really going on, or the fact that we may be just one species among a number that are on this world and in other worlds. So they let it out and they sensationalize it. How many times have you seen a TV show that says, watch tonight, UFO secrets revealed, blah, blah, blah. And then they'll start off giving you a little bit of truthful information and then they end up with their highly paid experts going, oh yeah, but that all has a natural explanation and it's just swamp gas and it's just ball lightning and, you know, they give you all these excuses. So the average person comes away, it's simply now all of a sudden there's no knowledge. Is simply believe. You either believe that something's going on or you don't.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they've conditioned people to not take this UFO stuff seriously. It's too bad.
Exactly, exactly. For most of my lifetime, if you mentioned UFOs, you had to snicker in the same breath.
Right. It's worrisome in a way. I've talked about with many ufologists on the show. It's the ufology. The whole idea of studying UFOs and trying to get to the bottom of this is in a pickle right now, because you don't have a second chance to make a first impression, and people have already made their minds up, or at least been told what they should think about UFOs. And it's going to be really hard to sort of sway that public opinion. We talked about tipping points earlier, you know.
But you know what? It's interesting because again, we're back to the. Fact that people are wising up, their knowledge is increasing, their understanding is increasing. Back in the 80s, 90s, I'd be on a radio talk show, and if we got into the subject of UFOs, invariably there'd be somebody who'd call in and saying, well, this guy's nuts, you know, or why do you even let him on the radio, you know? Today, I've been on many, many shows over the last 3-4 years, and nobody calls in and says that. Now, that doesn't mean there's probably not still some people out there who believe that, believe the whole thing's a hoax and a phony and a laughing stock, and we shouldn't be paying attention to it, but they're not vocal like they used to be.
Hmm.
So apparently I think there's a lot of people who are beginning to understand that when you start talking about UFOs and aliens, you're actually talking about a credible subject that should be discussed in a thinking society.
Yeah, well, you're making me think about all the people I'm not going to like if this UFO thing ever gets revealed, because it's going to be people that were like, yeah, I always kind of believed it. I just, you know, you're going to be a lot of those people. You're going to want to throttle
them. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're like, well, why didn't you say anything, pal? Jeez, we could have used you.
You know, that's interesting, but after the publication back in the 90s of my book on UFOs, Alien Agenda, which, by the way, now, as I understand it, is the top-selling nonfiction book on UFOs in the world.
Nice.
It's been translated into about a dozen languages. But I had people who had known all my life come up to me and say, oh, wow, let me tell you what I saw, or let me tell you what happened to me. and they tell me these incredible stories, and I go, well, you know, why didn't you tell me this before? And they say, well, we didn't think you'd believe us, you know? And it was only after they read my book and realized that I was willing to look dispassionately and objectively at the subject that they decided to open up and tell me about their own experiences.
Yeah, yeah. It's exactly like the people who, after the Snowden thing came out, they were all like, oh, of course the government's spying on us. You know, it's like, oh, geez.
Right, right. And yet before Snowden, anybody, me and many others who said, hey, the government's spying on you, well, we were just crazy conspiracy theorists.
Well, that,
now we know it's true.
That raises an interesting point, you know, because I said that when we did sort of a wrap-up of the year last year when all the Snowden thing in retrospect had come out. And, you know, it's like it was a big win for sort of the conspiracy community. Do you feel that in any way, you know, from where you're at?
Well, yes, and but then not much because, you know, so far there's very little except in some of the details that has come out from the Snowden revelations that I wasn't pretty much aware of. I think the difference is that where I once suspected something, now I know. And also the fact that here's somebody who obviously had was on the inside, had access to the internal information, and who is confirming what a lot of the conspiracy theorists had been saying all along. But it doesn't take a super brain to realize that if the government can do something, they will do it, okay?
Right.
I can't think of any top government official or any bureaucrat who is told, hey, we can do this, and says, no, no, let's not do that. That's not ethical. You know, no, they're all going to go for it. If it can be done, they'll do it.
Now, there's some people who have the theory that the whole Snowden thing was orchestrated just from the get-go, that the whole thing was sort of like a revelation of method, if you will. What are your thoughts on the whole idea that maybe...
You know, that is a thought. I do know that, although I tend to think the Snowden revelations are legit just simply because of the way it all came about and the way that he protected himself and the way that he got help from Glenn Greenwald and other reporters and the fact that he went and sought, you know, got himself out of the country before he could get grabbed, and that, just the whole context of that story, I tend to think that it's legit, although it is certainly not beyond the realm of possibility that the whole thing was, if not orchestrated, at least allowed to happen so that the government could basically say to us, yeah, we're doing this, what are you going to do about it?
Right, right. Yeah, it's...
I ask you, Tim, what laws have changed? What procedures have changed?
Yeah.
Are they not listening anymore? Come on.
No, exactly. Yeah, nothing changed out of it. Nothing came out of it where people were felt any safer.
Other than just people now, you know, can't really argue that it's not happening.
Right, right. Well, we have that on our side, I guess. Now, maybe you can speak to this, because I grew up in the 80s and throughout the 90s, obviously, up to today, and I didn't live through sort of the anti-war movement, the civil rights movement, and stuff like that. And so I've kind of been struck in the last couple of years just about how it seems like people there seems to be a meme of, like, large gatherings. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, in Paris after the thing, all those people, like, millions of people came together, and the protests, Ferguson, the Walker Center, the 99.
All those people in Paris, there were millions who gathered in Paris, but the photographs we got with Angela Merkel and the French president and every world leader except Obama, who I guess was on the golf course, you know, linking arms there. That was a photo op. If you really look at
all
it,
right,
look
yeah.
at, remember that? Mm. That was, they only had about 12, 14 deep in a arc, and it made it look like a huge thing, and there was a huge thing, but they weren't part of it. They were off over on the side street just doing a photo op, which
yeah.
leads me to believe that, again, the whole thing, if not orchestrated, was at least being used by the New World Order to, again, just stir people up and create a new international menace that that keeps the current status quo in position of power. Okay?
Yeah, I guess the point of the question, though, is sort of more like, because I was saying, this seems like a new development for me, that people are getting together like that.
No.
You know, like
you
I was talking about the Occupy Wall Street stuff. So, but was it like that back in the day too? In the
Even more so. It was more polarized back in the 60s, and I lived through all that as a newspaper reporter, and I was at some of the demonstrations. but as an objective reporter, not really part of it, although I remember at the time thinking, man, I think I'll drop out and become a hippie, but I never did. The thing is, you have to understand that, no, those were spontaneous demonstrations back in the 60s against the war, primarily not so much because we were fighting in Vietnam, but because they were utilizing the draft.
Yeah.
Okay, they were drafting kids off the street, and a lot of things changed. A lot of people began to go, wait a minute, you know, why should I be drafted and forced to go fight a war that I'm not totally in support of? And then also, it's like, how come I can be drafted at 18 and be sent overseas to get shot at it, but I can't buy a beer?
Right.
And a lot of people, you may have forgotten this, but there was a short period of time there towards the end of the Vietnam War and a little bit afterwards where they lowered the drinking age to 18. But then as soon as the war was over, they jumped it back up to 21.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and the peace symbol used to be a real red flag out in the rural and conservative areas of the country. If you had a peace sign on you, you were liable to get bad words thrown at you, if not a fist.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet today, you know, you go in any shop and you got T-shirts with peace symbols on it. You got little kids running around with peace symbols on them. You know, and that's because the globalists, the rulers, realized that the harder they fought against it, the more people were recruited to the anti-war movement, and the more determined they were to advance their beliefs, and so they co-opted the whole thing. You know, pretty soon, after a while, everybody was wearing a peace sign, and it became pretty irrelevant.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting. Okay, so you're telling me that it was sort of as fevered as it is nowadays. So it makes you wonder just if anything's going to come out of it that people. It seems like people are getting together more now.
The difference too was that in the 60s, especially young people who were at the core of most of the big anti-war demonstrations were young people and or students. And they didn't really have a lot. They didn't have a lot invested in the status quo or in the establishment. And so they were free to be idealistic enough to say, hey, let's change things, okay? Today, you know, because of the economy, everyone has to work their tail off just to keep their head above financial waters. And most young people owe student loans, or they're buying a house, or they're renting an expensive apartment, or they certainly want to have clothes and shoes and good cars and good electronics, which they normally could not afford, so they're buying it on credit, so they're in debt up to their ears, and so they're just not really in a position to go out and try to raise hell about things.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So yeah, they've got them under thumb as well. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And even though the draft is still in effect, you still have to register when you hit 18, I guess it is, but yet they're not drafting people, okay? So
yeah.
therefore the people who are against the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, they are just not as committed and as driven as were the people in the 60s who were facing the draft that was going to actually grab them off the street and send them there.
Right, right. They were like literally fighting for their lives, I guess you could say, in a lot of ways. It's worrisome. You wonder where this is all going.
Well, I think we talked about the tipping point, and I think we're getting close to the tipping point, but as we approach the tipping point,
they're going to try and tip us over.
They're going to stiffen up and crack down, and we already see that, the militarization of the police forces, the fact that where you used to, all you had to do was worry about your own little local police force, and now they're all under the control of Homeland Security, the modern equivalent of the Nazi Gestapo, which was in charge of every law enforcement agency in Germany. So now I think we're in a foot race to a crossroads. Either this tipping point is going to be reached and enough people are going to say, hey, you know, we don't want to live in a Fourth Reich, a police state, a totalitarian system, and they'll start dismantling it by voting everybody in Congress out, by voting for a president who is not a member of that club, by acting locally to regain control over their lives and destiny, or they're going to be put down. The government's going to clamp down more and more in the cities. You're going to find yourself running into armor-clad, black-clad, soldier police who are going to demand papers and who are going to have, checkpoints all over the place, cameras everywhere. That's already happening.
Yeah, that's already happening.
And you're going to go into a 1984 totalitarian society.
Yeah, I think people will, I think we're being led into it, and people are just accepting it now. It's scary, in a lot of ways. Instead of, with all this, like, talk about the police and everything, people are, they sort of grudgingly accept it. There's nothing you can do about it. That's just,
yeah,
the resignation.
That's true. Unfortunately, that's true, and it's because it's the old frog in the water analogy.
Yeah.
Back in the 60s when I was a police reporter, well, let me just tell you what I experienced on my own. Back in the 60s, if I was with the police on a case and a guy showed up in my suit and said, "I'm with the FBI," he would have his hat in his hand and he'd say, "I'm with the FBI, and I was wondering if I could help you on this case." And of course, back then, because of TV and the laudatory oration about J. Edgar Hoover and the fact that, the FBI with Ephraim Zimbalist was a big show on TV. Everybody thought the FBI was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And these cops would always be very impressed that the FBI would want to help them. And so they'd almost unanimously and constantly say, "Yes, yes, please help us," you know. And then just over, a decade, just a few years, all of a sudden the cops would be on a case. A guy in a suit would show up and he'd say, "I'm FBI and I'm taking over this case."
Yeah.
It really shifted. And the same thing has happened to the general public. Back in the 60s, if some cops had shown up in body armor and machine guns and said, "You do what we say," there would have been a great resistance. And people would have said, "Hey, wait a minute, you work for us. You can't treat us this way." But over the intervening years, we had the war on drugs, and oh my God, drugs, and crime's running rampant, and now you have to watch out for terrorists, okay? And so slowly and surely, it just got to the point to where now today, people just accept this militarized police force.
Let me hit on.
And what's scary to me, Tim, is that in the coming future, the young people of today, this is what they've grown up with, and they're not even going to know the difference.
Oh, I know.
Between a police state and a free society.
Yeah, that's the scary part. I feel like I'm going to be 36 in like a week. I feel like I'm being put out to pasture. I feel like the young people are, they don't know what they're getting themselves in for.
I know. See, and the thing is, to me, you're a kid, and yet if you run into one of those, say, a new policeman, and he's liable to be, 21?
Yeah, exactly.
you're going to think, where'd this kid come from?
Yeah, exactly. It's scary. Let me touch on a big sort of issue. We've been talking about this for the last 9 years, but I feel like it's worth revisiting every time around. 9/11, what's the status on all this? I feel like it's getting long in the tooth now. It's been 14 years. I feel like, I don't know if we're ever really going to, it's going to always remain
the new JFK. It's happening. It's a slow evolution, and it's not on the news. And, you don't hear CNN or ABC in a major newscast saying, "More people today realize 9/11 was an inside job."
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. But it is happening, okay? More and more information is coming out about 9/11. And the main thing is that it is trickling down through our society. And people, there's always been a hardcore of researchers and conspiracy people who have, from the get-go, said something's not right with this. In fact, John Farmer was the chief counsel of the official Bush-appointed 9/11 commission. And he's written in a book and said the story that was given to them, the 9/11 Commission, and to the Congress and to the media and to the public, is entirely untrue.
Yeah.
So, you know, now that's beginning to trickle down. And the hardcore skeptics are now being, you know, seeing their work verified. And then the people on the fence, they're now falling over into the knowledge group that knows that this was not what it was put up to be. And then all the way down in until now, today, I think it's only a hardcore minority of people who truly and devoutly believe in the 19 hijacker scenario presented to us by the government.
Right, but the scary part is it's like...
But it doesn't get mentioned. It doesn't get mentioned in the mass media, so nobody understands that this shift has taken place.
That's kind of what I'm concerned about here, because, you know, we talk about... You're obviously a titan in the JFK assassination research, and I think you'll agree with me that we reached some kind of tipping point a long time ago where the majority of people thought that there was a serious conspiracy to kill JFK, and whoever did it got away with it, and they still, even though we reached that tipping point... They still got away with it. That's the scary part with this 9/11 thing.
Well, if you draw things out, string things out long enough, you know, the public memory seems to be about 15 minutes, you know. And that's true. And that's how they do these things. Well, let me tell you something. I see the same thing going on, with the 9/11 as I saw and experienced with the Kennedy assassination. For about 15 years after the Kennedy assassination, number one, we didn't have access to information we have now. The famous Zapruder film was not shown until the mid-70s to anybody, including the Warren Commission, as a film. And it was just considered impolite to talk about it in decent company. Okay? Well, today we're in the tail end of a same period, which is we just don't want to talk about 9/11. Okay, that's politics, and that's we don't want to upset everybody here at the party or at the dinner table by talking about it. We're just not going to do that. But as you said, and is true, that now the public perception is shifting slowly, and more people are becoming aware that 9/11 was an inside job. If it was not actually orchestrated within the federal government, it at least was covered up by the federal government and used as a pretext to shred the Constitution through the Rushed Through Patriot Act and the Military Commissions Act and various presidential executive orders.
Changed the whole world. It changed our whole world.
Which has totally changed our society, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's my concern, you know. It's like... Even if we reach this tipping point, is anyone going to get punished for real for this thing? I don't know if it will ever happen. That's my
worry. It's a funny thing. You know, there have been international war crimes trials held in other countries, and George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld have all been found guilty of war crimes. But number one, that news does not really reach the average American. And number two, as long as those guys don't go to certain other countries, who's going to enforce it? Who's going to do something about it?
Yeah, exactly.
That's why it's up to us. Anyone listening to me, if you consider yourself a truly free American citizen, you need to take it upon yourself to, number one, learn the facts of all this stuff. And once you are satisfied you know the truth about some of these things, then you need to do whatever is within your power to see if you can't bring some justice to the world.
What can we do? That's the concern, you know, other than educate other people and hope to reach as many and reach that tipping point. But otherwise, you know.
Right. But, and that sounds kind of innocuous, but if you think about it, if enough people come to an understanding that we've been lied to and that the official story is not true, then just by that sheer knowingness, things will begin to change.
We can hope. We can hope.
Yeah.
One area where things are changing, I thought I'd get your opinion on, actually, is this. It seems like in the last, you know, five years, I'd say maybe, it seems like the imagination of people is reawakening to the wonders of space. What do you think of all that? It seems like that's been happening for the last few years, and now we're seeing, you know, private spaces growing. Exploration seems to be, people are excited about, you know, going to Mars and exploring Mars and stuff, and it seems like it's really peaked up in the last 5 years. What's your take on that?
Well, it has, but then on the other hand, there's also some foot dragging going on. Number one, I guess you're well aware that some of the private space efforts have recently ended in disaster.
Yes, it's run into a bumpy course the last few months.
Oh, yeah. And then the thing that has always struck me is that, you know, NASA went to the moon supposedly 6 times and then said, no, we don't really have the money to go back. Even though they had 22 Atlas rockets ready to go, which to me is kind of like saying, well, I built this Rolls Royce, but I don't have enough money to buy gasoline for it, you know.
Yeah.
But when the private sector says, well, here, we'll continue the work, and we're going to build suborbital craft, and we're going to put up space stations, and we're going to go to other planets, you would think that NASA would have been fully supportive of such an effort, since they themselves said they didn't have the finances to do it. But instead, the reality is that NASA has dragged its feet and thrown all kinds of obstacles. So it's almost as though somewhere somebody does not want us to be going into space. And yet, you know, going back to my youth and reading science fiction stories, to me, the whole prospect of a enlightened and prosperous and equitable future for everybody on this planet is for us to spread out. You know, think
right.
about it. You know, now we have a clash between the Christians and the Jews and the Muslims. What if we go and colonize other planets? All the Muslims could go live on one planet.
Yeah.
All the Jews could go live on another planet. All the Christians live on another planet, and everybody's happy. You know?
Yeah, until we have, like, a real Star Wars. You know?
Yeah, until we have the War of the Worlds.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. It'll be, you know, I've always thought that the whole private space thing may usher in the UFO enigma, help it out somehow.
Well, I think that plays a big role in it. They don't want us going into space because they're afraid of what we might find out there.
Right. Who's they, though? The government or the UFOs or both?
Well, primarily the government, except it's not really the government.
Right,
okay?
Obviously. Yeah.
There's two governments, okay? The government that we're all familiar with, which has congressmen and Supreme Court and the presidency and, you know, and they, you know, we rarely have contact with any of those people, but we do have contact with the mailman and the IRS agent, you know, blah. Okay, that's the government, but that government's just government, all right? No, then we have the government of the people who really rule, who tell these bureaucrats and who tell presidents and who tell congresspeople and gives them their marching orders, all right? And these are, in fact, usually not people who are officially part of the government. They're unofficial part of the government.
Hmm.
For example, you know, we like to think that the Secretary of the Treasury, through the president and through Congress, is in charge of our finances. But if you'll dig deeper, you'll find that there's a very little known agency called the Financial Stabilization Fund,
which was created
back during the 30s, and that is totally autonomous and can operate even outside U.S. laws, and that this little agency decides what truly happens to our money. And it's all, of course, under the thrall of the international bankers.
Mm.
So, see, you know, what you don't know can hurt you.
Well, they got a good system set up, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've been working at it for thousands of years.
Now, you got the new book coming out, and what did you say, in a couple months or so?
Yeah, a few months. I'm not real sure what the publication date is. I would say April, May, maybe.
Nice. What's the give us something that'll scare us a little bit? What's the one thing that's sort of in the book that you think people need to know about right away and freak people out?
The title is Population Control.
Mm, yeah.
Which was not my original title.
This seems to happen to you a lot.
I know. They wouldn't go with my original title, which was Death Culture.
Oh, I like that.
Again, when you consider the amount of what's in processed foods the bromide, the glyphosate, all these deadly chemicals, cancer-causing chemicals that's in our toiletries and our makeup and our food. And then you look at the water with, you know, laced with fluoride and benzene and all kinds of deadly things. And some of it being consciously added, not just, you know, natural pollution.
Yeah.
And then you look at the vaccines, you know, oh yeah, everybody's got to have a vaccine against the fall flu. And then they come out towards the middle of the fall and say, well, that one didn't really work. You have to go back and get another one. You know, and meanwhile, you know, you've got 200 million people paying, you know, $5, $20, you know, to the pharmaceutical companies. And these things have ingredients, adjuvants in it, like squalene and other harmful chemicals that are actually compromising a lot of people's immunization systems. So people are, you know, that's why in America today, you know, the majority of the population is either borderline or actually obese. And, you know, the leading cause of death is, you know, heart failure. And and all this stuff, and all of this. In fact, you know what the third leading cause of death is in the United States?
What's that?
Medical
obesity?
Treatment.
Oh, Jesus.
Medical treatment. Medical treatment. People who overdose on prescription medicine, or people who have surgeries that go bad, or, you know.
So, yeah.
So, you know, unless you have to, stay away from the medical establishment. You know, you have all these rare diseases that are resistant to antibodies that are out now running through some of the hospital systems. Anyway, so it's, and all of this did not just, you know, naturally evolve. A lot
right.
of this is put on there by the ownership of these multinational corporations. Monsanto comes to mind, which is now, you know, 80% of the food we're eating in the United States now has genetically modified organisms in it. And again, we don't even know what that's doing to us.
Right.
Probably won't for another 50, 100 years.
Yeah, well, what's the, you talk about population control, that's the title of the book. What do you think, is there an end game here for them? I know you say they want to kill us, but the population still keeps growing, and it's been a long time that they've been, you know, trying.
Yeah, but it's growing slower. It's growing slower.
Okay.
Yeah, the population of the world, back in the 70s, for example, was like, increasing by 2%, you know, like every few years. Today, that's dropped back to about 1%. So, of course, unfortunately, where most of the growth rate is in third world countries. And the balance there is that in a lot of these third world countries where the pollution factor is high and where nutrition is not a top priority and where medical treatment is not not readily available, and you know, the death rate tends to balance out the
yeah.
Birth rate.
Doesn't stand to reason.
The beauty of this scheme from the standpoint of the New World Order people is that they're profiting while culling the population. Because when they put all of this bad stuff in our food and our water and spraying, you know, chemtrails in the air, people are breathing these heavy metals, you know, it is slowly working on our immunization systems. So they are culling the human herd, both by the very elderly and by the very young. Child mortality in the United States is like way down the list of other countries.
Yeah.
And the people in the middle are just getting progressively sick and with various weird conditions, which requires them to go to the doctor and get more pills and get more surgeries, which only, you know, they're actually paying these people to do this to them.
Mm. Well, I guess the question I have in a sense is, like, if it's only reduced the growth of the population, shouldn't we really only get concerned when it starts to, when it gets into the negatives? I mean, that's what they want, right? They want to actually cut the population down. So it's
right. Right, but again,
it's a slow process.
They're trimming. Number one, they learned with the Nazis that if you try to go straight, just make a straight line and a rational move, let's just kill them, that there's going to be a backlash and they're going to have problems, a PR problem with that. So, see, all this stuff is happening. It's all good for you. You know, eat this gushy, sugar-filled treat because it's so delicious.
Mm.
You know, and then you all of a sudden you weigh 200 pounds and 300 pounds and
right.
And you have heart problems and arteriosclerosis and all kinds of things. And you know, and then you have to go get more medicine and you have to get medicine to counteract the side effects of the first medicine, and you know, you just on infinitum. But by doing this, see how many people today, Tim, and stop and think that, you know, that they are offering me products and services that are basically killing me.
Yeah.
See, you don't think about it. And so, in the third world, their populations are burgeoning because they don't practice birth control. They have as many kids as they can because their mortality is not very good.
Hmm.
In the first world countries like America, Europe, you know, they're only reproducing themselves, and even that's beginning to fall behind.
Yeah.
There's also the question, I don't know if you're aware of this, but the male sperm count, around the world has been declining.
I heard something like that, yeah.
In the last 25 or 30 years, and they're saying that at the current rate, if it keeps going the way it's going, and they can't even figure out what's truly causing all this. Although I would submit that it's probably due to, again, the processed food, the chemicals, and the non-nutritious stuff we're eating, and, you know, plus the stress of modern life. But regardless of the cause, they say that if the current trends continue, by about 2050, you know, there's that's when you're going to see the population start to decline.
Yeah.
Because men will be basically infertile.
Well, that's the, you know, you look at the whole big picture, you pull the camera further and further back, it's just scary to think, like I was saying, you know, I'm going to be 36 next week, I feel like I'm being put out to pasture, and we look at the JFK thing, that's like over 50 years now, 9/11, 14 years ago, it's like, feels like we're sort of just like bobbing along in this slowly getting worse situation, and, you know, I may be turning 56 in 20 years, I don't know how old you are, but maybe we'll be launching, you know, season 29, and you know, people will, it'll just slowly happen. It's very, very unsettling.
I hope I'm still around to do that show with you. I was a grown man when the Kennedy assassination happened, okay?
Hmm.
So I've lived through a lot of this change. I grew up in a free republic, you know, and unfortunately today we're not the republic anymore. In fact, when's the last time you heard a national politician refer to the republic? They don't talk about the republic anymore because we're not a republic anymore. We're a empire. We're an empire.
Mm. And it's like, you know, the world's just going to get shittier and shittier, but you're still going to be able to go to the movies. You're still going to be able to watch the Super Bowl. And you know, in 20 years from now, people will still be able to do that, and they'll just be used to living in a shitty world. That's the scary part.
Yep. But it's okay because you'll still be able to get your Big Mac, and you can watch the Super Bowl on TV.
Exactly.
Bread and circuses.
Yeah. It's worrisome. So I guess a show like this is like the vegetables. You got to eat your vegetables, folks.
Every now and then you got to eat your vegetables. That's true.
Let me see here. Population control, that's coming out in a couple months. Didn't you reissue Crossfire recently, right?
Yes, in a new updated version, and I would really encourage people who are really interested in the Kennedy assassination to get the new version of Crossfire because, number one, it's up to date. It brings in the information that was found out by the Assassination Records Review Board. I've got all the information showing and proving that the famous Zapruder film cannot be trusted as a true depiction of the assassination, that it was doctored that very weekend and at the National Photographic Interpretation Center of the CIA. I also published the original plat map done by the surveyors hired by the Warren Commission to survey Dealey Plaza and what they said and allowed me to copy their original map was that the one published by the Warren Commission has been altered and changed. They said at the time everybody connected with their study said there's no way that one man could do all this. And that's what they all determined. But, of course, all that got altered by the Warren Commission, who came out with their cockamamie single bullet theory.
Yeah.
And so then I list a lot of the most recent information, as well as a blow-up photograph of Zapruder frame number 314 that clearly shows the driver did not shoot Kennedy. Okay. So we put to rest one of those myths. Anyway, yes, that would be a great addition for anyone who's really interested in what really happened to John Kennedy.
Nice, nice. I'll make a suggestion, too. I'd like to see a reissue of Rule by Secrecy, like an updated, expanded, up to the last, like, 10 years added in there, because that would be, that's my one of my favorite books. I give it as a Christmas gift every year to people
well,
I'm trying to
Well, if you
enlighten.
Would follow up Rule by Secrecy by Rise of the Fourth Reich,
obviously,
and,
yeah.
then the Trillion-Dollar Conspiracy, and then Occulted History, and now the new one, Population Control, it'll pretty well bring it, put it all together for you and bring it up to date.
Exactly. I get what you're saying. Yeah. So it's like those are the sequel books to that.
Yeah. In fact, I was really bothered working on Population Control because almost every little chapter, which is just one little chapter in this book, could actually be expanded into a book of its own.
Yeah. Well, that's how it seems.
So much information out there that people are not being told about.
Yeah, well, it seems, like I said earlier, it seems like this new book came kind of grew out of the Trillion-Dollar Conspiracy stuff, so it sounds interesting.
It's a follow-on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got to give you credit, Jim. I mean, I think I would have thrown up my hands at this point if I were you, because you've uncovered how rotten things are in the world.
Oh, well,
I guess what keeps you going? What makes you hopeful about all this?
Well, I'm not sure I'm that hopeful. I'm ensconced in a stone house hidden away in the woods in the middle of the country with a cannon.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. You've kind of dropped out of the whole scene just to try and make sure you survive.
Let's just say I'm prepared.
Well, you got to be, yeah. It's a worrisome situation.
Well, you have to understand my motto, Tim, which is hope for the best, plan for the worst.
That hits the nail right on the head, my friend. Absolutely.
There you go.
Absolutely.
All right.
Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, Jim. Let me run down the books once more for folks. Crossfire, Rule by Secrecy, Alien Agenda, Psi Spies, Inside Job, Above Top Secret, Rise of the Fourth Reich, The Trillion-Dollar Conspiracy. Any plans for another fiction book, in light of Sisterhood of the Rose?
Well, there's too much reality going on. That's keeping my attention. Plus, my publishers in New York say they don't want me to. They don't want to publish a fiction book because then everybody will say, "Well, look, he just writes fiction. He's just making all this other stuff up."
Oh, geez, that's not fair.
Which I don't necessarily buy. But,
yeah. And also Our Occulted History and then Population Control coming out sometime this spring. Find out more at jimmars.com. Jim, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I really do give you so much credit. If it wasn't for Rule by Secrecy, serendipitously turning me on to all this, I wouldn't be doing this for so long, and you really helped launch my interest in this, and that's why we have you on every season to launch the show.
Well, I appreciate it, and just remember this. There's more of us than there are of them, and if we'll simply educate ourselves and take action, we can overcome all the bad things.
That sounds good to me, buddy. Hey, I'll talk to you soon to kick off season 10. It'll be a big celebration, I promise.
All right.